to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
Aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It is Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday, February 5th, 2010 here. What a crazy week it has been. What a crazy day, and it's only going to get worse here. All right, the phone lines are open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Jared's in the control room, twiddling the dials, flogging the giant mutant hamster, and ready to answer the phone as soon as you call in to be on the show. Chat rooms are open, both at Ustream and WhatReallyHappened.com. The Ustream video webcam is up and running. People are already signing on to watch the show. Before we get into the regular news I wanted to talk about, I wanted to respond to a couple of things in the news break, and also I was watching on TV while waiting for the show to begin. First of all, in the news break, I don't know if you picked up on this very subtle business. They're talking about the economy, and have you noticed how the health of the economy is being described in terms of how much Americans are willing to borrow? And they're saying they're not borrowing as much, and therefore things are really bad. Well, that's because in our economic system, money doesn't exist until somebody borrows it. When you sign the loan agreement, the bank simply creates the money out of thin air, and you go spend it, and then you spend the next several years working at full face value to pay it back to the bank. That's the way it works. And the bottom line is, if everybody pays off their loans and their credit cards, there's no money left in circulation. And if you're not borrowing money, they can't issue the new money with which somehow you will pay the interest on the old money. That's why the entire Federal Reserve System is a pyramid scheme. And why they're always talking about the growth of the economy. What they're really talking about is the growth in the number of people who have gone into debt. And the entire U.S. economic system, the whole Federal Reserve System, depends on each new generation of Americans being a larger population and going into debt to generate new money, which through the machinery of commerce is used to pay the interest on the old money. If you have fewer borrowers and there isn't enough money to make the payments on the old debt, then it all starts coming apart, which is what's been going on here. And as I've said many, many times on the show, the crippling, fatal flaw, the design flaw with the reserve system of banking is the moment that first Federal Reserve note goes into circulation, more money is owed to the bank than is actually in existence. And that's why it's a pyramid scheme, and that's why it's starting to come apart. Now, the other story I wanted to talk about, I was watching Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She's out there on TV, and she's starting to do the talking point about how Iran is the biggest threat to the United States of America. And the two talking points that she was hammering on as to why we had to go to war with Iran was Iran's failure to disclose the nuclear facility at Qom, and their failure to accept the U.S. deal for uranium enrichment. Now, two points there. First of all, it was Iran that announced the new facility. They caught the United States and Israel and everybody else completely off guard. Iran simply stood up and said, we are building a new facility at Qom, and said, IAEA, come in and take a look, which the IAEA did. The U.S. is trying to spin it like this was some kind of a top-secret facility that got exposed. That's not true. In fact, the U.S. got completely caught off guard. And I'll tell you, the proof of that is really very, very simple. If there had been a secret facility, and when Iran first announced it, the U.S. tried to say, oh, we've known about it for several years. We've known about it for 2 years. And then, of course, looking at satellite photos of the area from 2 years ago, it hadn't even started. They've only really just started it now. But the rules of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty are that when any member country starts to build a new nuclear facility, they must announce it to the IAEA 6 months before it becomes operational. Now, Iran is saying this facility will not be running for at least another year and a half. So they're well within the requirements of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. But the U.S. is trying to spin it like this was some big, deep, dark secret that we discovered and Iran was trying to hide. And, of course, it's exactly the reverse. Iran announced it in accordance with the rules. The IAEA has inspected it in accordance with the rules. It's the United States that's trying to claim that this is a reason to go to war. Now, the other thing that she said is Iran's failure to accept the deal for nuclear enrichment offered by the United States and the West. Now, the use of the word deal is a little misleading because all the U.S. had was a proposal. It isn't a deal until Iran agrees to it. So they can't say Iran is breaking a deal if the deal was never made. They had a proposal, and the U.S. proposal was that for Iran to ship all of their enriched uranium out of Iran and then wait for whenever the Western powers deigned to send fuel rods and medical isotopes back in. And Iran said, we're not going to accept that proposal simply because the last time we did, we never got our nuclear materials back. So that's a very reasonable precaution on Iran's part. What Iran has said repeatedly is, we'll do that swap a little bit at a time. Here's so many pounds of our enriched uranium, and at the same time we hand this to you, you will hand back to us the refined fuel rods. That's Iran's proposal. There is no deal. Contrary to what the Secretary of State is trying to claim is the case, there's been a proposal, one that Iran finds unacceptable based on past history. I don't think there's any question at this point. The U.S. is in a mountain of hurt financially. There's no way they can get out of it. And they're going to start a world war to try and sort of obfuscate the fact that the U.S. government has completely screwed up this country. Something amazing here. Now, getting on to the serious news here, obviously the big news this morning, we were hearing how the unemployment rate has dropped. It's back down to 9.7. Isn't that wonderful? Blah, blah, blah. And yet in the same news report, they're saying that we lost an additional 20,000 jobs in January. So how can you lose more jobs and have the unemployment number come down? Obviously, we're looking at some of these seasonal adjustments or birth-death ratio or all these other little statistic manipulations they do to sort of hide what's really going on. Nobody ever comes out with raw data. They're going to run it through all this official sanctioned process, and they're going to come up with a number which looks really good going into an election year. Right now, the only chance the Democrats have to hang on to the Congress is to convince you that the economy is on the mend, that all the money that they have taken from you to give to Wall Street somehow or other is percolating back down through the system. I think Reagan called it trickle down, and I'm tired of being trickled on by this government, by the way, and that somehow it's all working. So they're going to say, oh, look, yes, more people are out of work, but the unemployment rate has come down. Therefore, things must be really, really good. Well, the bottom line is we know it's all statistical manipulation. We know that the real unemployment rate is actually getting close to 20%, and we know that a couple of weeks from now, they'll say, oh, we have to revise those jobless numbers, and it'll go up by another, you know, couple of hundred thousand, because that's been the pattern for the last year. Every month, they'll say, the unemployment is getting better. And then 2 months later, they say, well, we're having to revise the job numbers for 2 months ago, and it really was a little bit worse than we thought it was at the time. And it's a way of sort of lying and hedging and fudging, and it's going to get worse because it's an election year. And the Democrats know that if things are not better by November, they're going to lose Congress, and they're going to lose big, and the GOP will be back in power. Not that I think that's an improvement, but that's the way politics works here in the United States of America. So when you're seeing these two conflicting claims where more jobs were lost, and yet they're claiming the unemployment number, the unemployment rate went down, you know somebody's lying somewhere. More than likely, we've had a huge chunk of American workers who ran off the end of their unemployment benefits, and the government doesn't count them as unemployed anymore. And that may be a big part of where they're getting this magic ability to lose more jobs and yet claim that the unemployment figures are going down here. Now, today was a rough ride on the Dow. It spent most of the day in the 9,000s. There were two very obvious upward shoves, one at about 10:30 in the morning Eastern time. And when that didn't stick and the Dow went back down, it went way, way, way down there. And then about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there was another upward shove, I presume from the plunge protection team, and the Dow just barely crossed into the green at the closing bell. So the news is saying, say the market, and we've hit the bottom, going back up, the market can only go anywhere but up, and so forth and so on. And again, it's all manipulation. It's all manipulation. It's all propaganda. The Democrats want to hang on to Congress. They have totally screwed the country, the same as their predecessors, the GOP, and now it's election year politicking. They're going to try and just blow smoke up your sphincters for the next several months to try and convince you to let them stay in charge of the government. I think it's a mistake. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I think the time has come, and maybe a Friday is a good day to do it, but I think the American people, and indeed the people of the world, need to wake up to a very unpleasant reality. There's a lot of denial out there, but I think the numbers speak for themselves, and we're seeing more and more articles that support this idea. The United States federal government is beyond saving. They are so deeply in debt that the interest alone now exceeds all the federal income tax being paid by every single American. The U.S. federal government is so deeply in debt that if they were to nationalize, which is government speak for steal, all of the personal assets in the entire country, all your land, all your cars, all your businesses, all your jewelry, the fillings out of your teeth, all of it, it would still only cover one quarter of the debt that they owe. The U.S. government is heading toward bankruptcy. Okay, within the next 12 months, the U.S. Treasury has to refinance $2 trillion in short-term debt. Remember back during the Clinton administration, he rolled a lot of the long-term debt into short-term debt. And everybody said, why are you doing that? The interest rate's going to be higher. They're going to have to be dealing with that, you know, in much sooner. But he said this was a really good idea. And, of course, it freed up a lot of capital for him to manufacture his so-called budget surplus, which was actually money looted out of the Social Security Trust Fund. Plus, there's the deficit spending. Congress has just raised the debt ceiling another almost $2 trillion, of which they're estimating to spend $1.5 trillion of it just in the next fiscal year. And we already know that tax revenues at both the federal and state levels are coming up short because economic activity in this country is grinding to a halt. But still, even if we're confined to that number, it's $3.5 trillion worth of capitalization the U.S. Treasury has to come up with in the next 12 months. Where are they going to borrow that? That's one quarter. Actually, more than that, it's almost one third of the United States' entire gross domestic product, and we're the world's biggest economy, in theory. So where's all this money going to come from? The answer is, well, they can print up a whole bunch of paper money, and that'll crash the dollar. But they can't borrow that much money. Who's going to loan it to them? China's starting to pull back. China understands that the U.S. government can go on, you know, making all these promises to borrow the money. But if the economic activity of the United States is grinding to a halt because we have been taxed into paralysis and inactivity, the U.S. government can't come up with the money. The U.S. government can't even balance their books. They can't stop borrowing, let alone get to a position of paying any of it back. That's the problem. We have to face the reality that the U.S. federal government is heading for a collapse, and there's no way to stop it. The people of the United States of America, that's you listening to this show right now, you have only two choices. You can allow the U.S. government to drag you down into a new dark ages of poverty and ignorance and deprivation, scratching in the dirt for your next meal. Or you can choose to stop throwing good money after bad and let the U.S. government collapse as it has worked so hard to do for lo these many years. And then we can replace it with something with a little more common sense and a couple of rules going in, like a balanced budget amendment in the Constitution, and no private central banks. There are no other options. There is no way to save this government. We and our children and our grandchildren could submit to a 90-95% aggregate tax rate for the rest of our lives and work and slave and give to the government and work and slave some more. And at the end of that time, what would we have? We'd have exactly what we have now, a government that is reading our emails and listening to our phone calls and confining us to free speech zones and running us through naked body scanners at the airport because they're so totally paranoid that we have reached the point of anger and rebellion that they dare not trust us. Why should we work that hard for a government that will mistreat us that badly? I can't think of a reason. I don't think you can either. All righty here. Let's see. Looking at some of the details, Ohio state income tax revenues are off $97.7 million. They're having to take the budget acts to their state employees. Indiana state revenue off $74.8 million off the forecasts. Everybody's believing the government numbers about unemployment and revenue and all the rest, and they're coming up short. They're coming up short. They're all coming up short. Chicago foreclosures soared in fourth quarter. More Chicago-area homeowners defaulted on their mortgages during the final 3 months of 2009 than in any other quarter since the housing crisis began in 2006. But you can count on the Congress and the President to continue to blow smoke up your sphincters and tell you that the economy's turning around, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, we've got green shoots and storm clouds dissipating, and all these other euphemisms to try and convince you that you should vote them back into power. Because they understand that if the economy does not materially improve, they're going to lose the Congress, and the GOP will get it, which is not an improvement. Personally, I think we ought to be looking at a slate of complete independence. I don't want anybody who's a Republican in Congress. I don't want anybody who's a Democrat in Congress. I certainly don't want anybody in Congress who is taking money from the government of Israel. Looking at the Republicans and the Democrats, anarchy is looking very, very attractive right now. Now, Trim Tabs has done a study. And they're estimating that the take-home pay of all taxpayers in the United States in 2009 plunged $800 billion, or 12%. Your standard of living declined 12%. That's a big chunk in a single year. But the value of the U.S. stock market, on paper, surged $3.5 trillion, or 27%, almost one-third. And what this means is all the money that the U.S. government is borrowing and printing up that was supposed to be for TARP and bailout and improve the economy, the only economy it's improving is Wall Street and the bankers. They're making like bandits. They're putting money in their pockets. They're paying themselves huge bonuses. And you are losing your lifestyle that you worked your entire life to build. It's dissolving right in front of you, and it is official U.S. government policy. They are perpetuating their power and wealth by deliberately impoverishing you. They're looting you. They're looting you. They are nothing but lawyers and bookkeepers. They don't actually know how to run a business or an economy or a factory. All they know how to do is to take money away from one group of people and give it to another group of people that they like better. That's really all government ever does, plus declare wars. I mean, what is communism? We're going to take money away from the rich and give it to the poor. What's fascism? We're going to take money away from the poor and give it to the rich. That's all government knows how to do is redistribute the wealth and take a little piece off the top for their operating costs. They're not creating any new wealth for anybody, not even for Wall Street. Anything government hands out, they had to take from somebody else. And that's what they're doing. And they're trying to basically juggle the books to keep the party going a little bit longer. But the writing is on the wall. The U.S. is on its way out. And you can either get dragged down with them or stand back and say, okay, farewell. It was nice knowing you. We'll be right back.
Stop. Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We have a saying that we have on a coffee cup around here. I think it's also on some T-shirts. The last official act of any government is to loot the nation, and I really do think that's where we are right now. We were talking about how in the last year, your standard of living has declined 12%. Under government policy, whereas the stock market and their investors increased their wealth by 27%, and all basically on the backs of the taxpayer, because our productivity and our industry has not restarted. In fact, the bottom line is all this money that they borrowed and printed up and showered all over Wall Street, it created huge profits for Wall Street firms and their investors. If any of you were wondering why Goldman Sachs is showing this huge runaway profit at a time when our national productivity doesn't seem to exist anymore, that's the reason. They're simply printing up money and giving it to Goldman Sachs. But all of this money that they did not restart the country's economy, and it did not bring prosperity to the average Americans. As I've been saying for the last year, they were moving the money in the wrong direction. Now, just going from the government's official debt ceiling, which amounts to $45,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country, if instead of taking that money from us to give to Wall Street, if they'd done it the other way around, if they'd given every American citizen, let's round it up to $100,000, because if you look at all the $27 trillion that they made available to Wall Street banks and investment companies to get out of this gambling casino mess they created with the derivatives, it's easily $100,000 per American that we're all on the hook now for, to pay for this mess down the road. If the U.S. government had done it the other way around, $100,000 for every single living American, we would not be defaulting on our mortgages. There'd be no housing crisis. Our credit card bills would be up to date. There'd be no credit crisis. We could go out and buy American cars. The American car industry would still be intact. We'd be going down to the mall, and we'd be buying clothing and flat panel TVs and cameras and all the rest of it. There wouldn't be a retail crisis. The reason our economy is grinding to a halt is because the money has been sucked out of the ordinary population and given to Wall Street, and an economy cannot function where the money is sitting in just one place. And that's just the bottom line. Now, if you want to know just how incredibly desperate the federal government is for more of your money, they've come out with this deal of prepaying your estate taxes. And this is the deal they're trying to put this through Congress. They're basically going to go to the very rich people in the United States of America, and they're going to say, if you will pay your estimated estate taxes right now, could be 30 years earlier, they're going to people who are in their 40s, who are multimillionaires, and saying, if you'll prepay your estate taxes now, give us the money now, we'll cut you a break. You'll have to pay less than would otherwise be the case if you wait till you die. It's an act of pure desperation to get more cash going into the federal coffers. And it's not going to work for three very good reasons. One, people who have that kind of money, they're addicted to money, they're not going to want to give any of it up. Estate taxes, that's the problem of the heirs to deal with. I don't have to worry about it. I shouldn't have to pay for it. You know, little Johnny, when he inherits everything, he'll clean up that mess. Second of all, based on the long history of this country, a future Congress can completely undo this and say, well, gee, thanks for prepaying, but we've decided you're still going to have to pay more estate taxes when you die. Our government has done that before many, many times. Nobody can take their word for any promises made for the future. And if you don't believe me, look at the baby boomers just starting to retire now and how they're being reneged on their deal. After all the money they've paid in and the federal government took it out and spent it elsewhere, now they're saying, well, we're going to have to cut back on your benefits. Sorry, but golly gee shuckies, there's a war on. And finally, of course, for a lot of Americans, and I'm one of them, the United States of America and its government aren't going to be here in 30 years. It's an act of lunacy to make any kind of a deal with this government when it may not be here next year, let alone 30 years from now. But it's an indication of just how desperate they are to find some way to take more money from the American people, because they're broke and they're running out of money, and at some point in the next few months, they're going to hit a default crisis. It doesn't matter how high they run that that debt ceiling. At some point, you know, they just start printing the money like crazy and inflate the debt away, and the dollar will crash, and that will be the end of it. It is impossible for the U.S. federal government to pay off its national debt. It is in too deep. It is a black hole. All right, we're going to go to the phones here, and we have got Scott in Utah. Aloha, Scott. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, great show, Mike. I can't believe that I have, punched out from, Mike Savage. I've been watching, listening to him for, a very long time. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was introduced to you, a couple years ago when I started listening to Alex Jones, and you came up there. But I gotta tell you, Mike, when you listen to some of these people that are in the, massive mainstream media, mm-hmm. it almost seems as if, they're trying to drive us down and like meld our minds into a certain, perspective. And what I like about your show, and by the way, when I started listening to Alex and you came on and Tarpley came on and Chapman came on, I thought that you guys were, quite frankly, idiots. But after a while and seeing what's going on, I got to tell you, the situation is out of control. Anyway, I'm listening to you because, hey, you got a bead on things, brother.
Thank you.
What I hope that everybody who's listening to you out there will get some of these people that they know. That listen to those other sources to come and hear some real truth. And, look, I I've been listening to you talk about, finances and everything and the statistics that the BLS puts out. And quite frankly, they're fraudulent. If you want a statistic that doesn't lie, look at the 10-year bond. When China and India and Russia and the Mideast and, all these people dump that thing, we're freaking doomed, And anyway, look, I told your screener that I actually didn't want to come online. I just wanted him to, tell you that, mm-hmm. Hey, you got somebody out here in Utah that's telling other people that they got to, come and listen to you, because They got to get away from these Rush and Hannity and Savage, and they really have to go to the alternative media to really get a beat on things. And before I go, look, I'm kind of new to listen to you. If I want to send you an email once in a while, is there a link on your website that I can just like click and
Yes, there is. And the email address is the letters WRH at whatreallyhappened.com. And I do make a point of trying to read all of my email. It is a large task every day, but it doesn't go to like a Bitbucket or anything like that. I do scan through it all. So if you've got something important to send me, please send it along and I'll take a look. And the only other comment I would have for you, and unfortunately, Rusty, we're going to have to keep you into the next segment, so stay with us through the commercial break. But the only other thing, Scott, I appreciate it when people tell other their friends to tune into my show. That's not always necessary. If you hear something that is factually correct and you understand how it works, just tell your friends yourself and get the truth out that way. This is not just about me and building my show audience, although obviously I'd love to be on more radio stations and everything, but this is right now getting the American people awake to the fact that the government has become the biggest threat to our standard of living, far worse than any terrorists. We are being looted right now. The nation, the government is falling, and the last official act of any government is to loot the people, and that's exactly what they're doing right now. So, Scott, thanks an awful lot for that phone call. We're going to let you go here, and we're coming down to the end of this segment here. And it's not just here in the United States. Greece is there in strikes over their austerity package. Now there's concern that if the EU does not step in to intervene at Greece, we're starting to see that rot spread to Spain and Portugal. We've got Iceland is getting ready to hold a referendum about possibly repudiating their debt to the IMF. This could turn out to be a global revolution. You want globalism? I got your globalism here, buddy. Right here in this news. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right back to the phones. Rusty in Texas. Aloha, Rusty. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Mike. I've been reading a lot of articles there and on your site. And what the ones that have really grabbed my interest the most are what the cities and municipalities and states are doing when they do run into these budget deficits. And it seems to me like the first thing they're cutting is... social services, that story about Colorado Springs this week, they cut off all the parks, they're going to cut the water, and they're kind of like rubbing the people's nose in it, saying, y'all don't want to pay your vote these tax increases, well, we're going to cut this. But what they're not cutting is their secretary, and, all the little perk jobs that go along with all the bureaucracy that, and when you really realize it, man, how many people are actually working for the government, because You know, manufacturing in this country is gone. I'm in manufacturing, and it's really amazing. Like, I know very few people down here in Texas that much that still work in it. Mostly immigrants and people like that, and me. I guess it's a morbid fascination, and it's really not healthy, but. It's going to be interesting to see the next phase of it. This is just the first phase, First, they're going to cut all the help to the people. But what are they going to do when the money really runs out? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think somewhere between now and then, I'm expecting to start seeing riots. We've got people who are going hungry. We've got people who are homeless through no fault of their own, and they're beginning to wake up and recognize they didn't do anything wrong. They played by the rules. And instead, the government has been running up prices and running down our opportunities to pay our bills. It's an attack on the middle class, and people are beginning to wake up and realize that their lives are being destroyed not by Osama bin Laden from some cave or actually from his grave somewhere in Afghanistan. It is the federal government that is destroying our lives and our freedoms. And I think people are getting very, very angry. It's what I see in the emails coming here to the website. I hear it in the phone calls. I see it in the chat rooms. And we're rapidly approaching a breaking point. And I think it's for this reason that Obama and his people, they're out to start the next major war in Iran, because they're going to get it going and they're going to escalate to a global war. And then they're going to say to the American people, look, we're sorry that you're starving. We're sorry that you're homeless. But we've got a war on, and you don't want to be defeated by those godless Muslim moon-worshipping whatever's, so you're going to have to stand with us even if you don't like us, because we're united in our common, the same crud that we went through with World War One and World War Two. And it's the same trick over and over again. The government spends itself into an unpayable black hole and then tries to get out of it by killing the people that they owe money to, or conquering people and say, you must pay us tribute equal to the money that we owe to the banks, and so forth and so on. And the bottom line is, the reason I'm really opposed to World War III, besides my general bad feelings about killing people for no real reason at all, is the fact that the U.S. is going to lose this next one. Now, from the point of view of the bankers, they don't even care who wins or loses, because the wars generate debt, and debt is what gives the banks power over the rest of us. That's why they love the reserve banking system, because once they can bribe some legislature into signing on to the reserve banking system, then the entire society becomes a slave to it, because it doesn't matter how hard you work, you can never pay off all the accumulated debt. And that's where the U.S. government is right now. I think we've got to let the federal government collapse and take its debts with it. And I'll tell you right now, if the U.S. government collapses, I guarantee you there's going to be some carpetbagger stand up there and say, we are bound by honor to underwrite the debts of the preceding administration. That's the guy the Federal Reserve is going to be funding for a position in the new government. When somebody stands up and says that we are obligated for the debts of the previous government, you give that person a good coating of tar and feathers, and you run them out of town on a rail. Because we've got to set an example. We, the people, did not agree to any of this. The federal government got into this tax mess, this debt mess, without our permission, and they're going to get out or not without our help, is really the bottom line.
Personal question, Mike. I've heard you talk about you have roots in Texas.
No.
Oh, well.
I've been to Texas.
Okay.
My roots are in New Hampshire.
Okay, I thought you had some folks in Texas.
I've got an ex-wife who lives out there somewhere. May God have mercy on your soul, but that's the only connection I have to Texas. I worked in Houston for a while when I was still with NASA.
Okay, all your exes live in Texas. All right, thank
you. That's, well, I only have the one. All right, thanks an awful lot. All right, we're going to switch over here to Karen. And aloha, Karen. Welcome back to the show. And obviously you're calling in to give us an update on the national strike. You've got a cute little logo that you sent me in the email. And I know you've got this big national conference call tomorrow. So give us the latest details.
All right. Well, I think that the best one is that logo. And it came to me from an email contact over the Tax-Free 15 site from Matt, and he called it the New World Odor. So now
Yes. We
got the smell of corruption. It's the New World Odor. That would make great T-shirts because we need to laugh at these bozos.
Yes, we do. Laughter will take away the fear that we have of them, and we've got to make fun of them as they so richly deserve.
Yeah, that's why, you know, the dominant criminal minority and the New World Odor. Now, tomorrow is our very first conference call, and that telephone number is 712-775-7200. That's 712-775-7200. Access code 431-669-POUND. 431-669-POUND.
Okay, now that is at 11 a.m. Pacific time.
Right.
Okay, and how long is the call expected to last?
Well, this one, we're going to try and shoot for under an hour. It has to be a little under an hour because right at noon, I'm going to be a guest with Larry B. Kraft and Tom Cryer. I tell you, Mike, this is really starting to pick up, and we are reaching out and asking patriots from the Tea Parties, activists of all kinds, to get on this freedom train because we're headed for tyranny otherwise, and there's room for everybody on the train. You can have your own individual boxcar with the people who you love, but you need to stand together. All of us need to stand together and face this new world order.
Yeah, we absolutely do. We're out of time. We're out of the luxury of thinking that somehow this is all going to work itself out. It's very obvious that's not the case. From the point of view of the government, they see this as a fight for their survival, and people in government have this amazing psychological ability to equate their own personal survival and welfare with that of the nation itself. When they're out there and they tell you what they're doing is good for the nation, no, it isn't. It's good for them. Look at the economic policies of the last 2 years, and you will understand that what was good for the government and good for Wall Street was terrible for the American people. The biggest threat to your life right now is the federal government, and you know, you voted for hope, and now you're living on your spare change.
Well, and they just put the Council of Governors here, so there's a list. If you live in Vermont, Washington, Arizona, Puerto Rico, Oklahoma, Virginia, Missouri, Maryland, North Carolina, or South Dakota, your governor has just sold you out and become an Obamatized, treasonous, I can't even finish the sentence there anyway.
Well, no, I understand exactly what you're saying. It's a means to bypass the legislature by linking the state governors directly to the White House. It is the implementation of a dictatorship. And at some point, Obama is going to declare a national emergency, either following a false flag attack, could even happen as soon as this Sunday, and he's going to say, we don't have time to go through the machinations of the Supreme Court or the Congress. You've got to do what I tell you to save the nation from booga, booga, booga. So
that's exactly my fear, too, Mike. I think that with this declaration, things are amping up because too many of us are waking up. And for this movement, this strike to be less than 2 weeks old, it's really reaching far and wide into the hearts of the American people. So if they can...
It is. It's really taking off. I think you've tapped... You know, people know, they feel they have to do something. This may be the last nonviolent thing that they can do that might begin to have some kind of an effect of sending a message. And as I said before, the message that we're sending is not just to the U.S. federal government that we've had it, that we're out of money, that you can't tax us for anymore because we don't have it to give you. The real message is to those foreign investors who have parked trillions of dollars in the U.S. on the promise that we taxpayers will all cover the losses. And the message is, no, we won't. You are on your own. Okay? Karen, we got to let you go. We got news and commercial break here, but do me a favor and call in again on Monday, all right?
I will do. Thank you, Mike. Power to the people through peaceful unity.
You got it. Thanks an awful lot. And we're going to take a break for news. We'll be back in about 7 minutes. Aloha.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Second hour here on Friday, February 5th, 2010. All kinds of crazy stuff going on. I was listening on the break just then, and it almost got past me before it even registered. Apparently, Obama has come out with the new NASA budget, and the plan to return to the moon has been scrubbed. My concern is the last I heard that Obama was thinking about even canceling the new space shuttle and instead would simply spend the money hiring other nations that actually have a space program to ferry our astronauts up to that flying flagpole that we have in the sky. Although I understand they're getting some really nice new hardware with this weekend's launch of the shuttle here. Now, I want to clarify a point. I'm a big fan of the space program. Years and years ago, before I was in the movie and TV and radio business, I worked for NASA, and I really enjoyed it. And it was one of those things that you felt really good about the United States of America. We'd gone to the moon. We were sending spaceships all over the solar system and so forth and so on. But the reason I support the space program, especially right now, and I know things are hard economically, but outside of war, the space program was the incubator for some of the greatest technological advances of our time, which would lead to new technologies, new manufacturing methods, new products, new industries, new jobs, reversing the balance of trade. If you look at the explosion of high-tech industries in the United States of America throughout the 1970s and the 1980s, they all trace their roots back to the Apollo moon program. And why Barack Obama does not comprehend that in savaging NASA, and I don't agree with a lot of the things NASA is doing these days, but in cutting the space program, he's cutting off the goose that laid a lot of the golden eggs that made us prosperous when Obama was growing up. And I'm a little sorry to see it. I wasn't all that hot about a permanent base on the moon. I think we should be continuing to go. I think we ought to go back to Titan. I think we need to send another soft lander to Titan. You know, forget about Europa and melting through the ice to see if there's something in the water down there. If we want to prove once and for all that there is life on other worlds that is truly alien to what we have here on Earth, we need to go back to Titan. We now know there's liquid methane on that surface. If there's something swimming in that methane, it's for darn sure not a contaminant brought from Earth on the spacecraft itself, which is a problem we're already facing with the Martian probes. All right, story today. This is kind of interesting. Actually, it isn't. It's kind of tragic. 70 Irish priests accused of sex crimes in the United States. This is getting to be old hat. U.S. victims of child abuse have unearthed a direct link to scandals in Ireland, revealing that 70 Irish priests who worked in the United States have been accused of pedophile crimes. Okay. According to the Bible bangers, God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, all-knowing, all-powerful, wise. As George Carlin says, just can't handle a checkbook and he needs your money. To which I would add, doesn't seem able to read a resume. Can't keep his own staff in line. Doesn't make him qualified to be running the entire universe. I think the bottom line is, all jokes aside and all kidding aside, the fact that there is this clergy sex abuse problem, and it's not just the Catholics, it's very heavy in the Catholics, but other religions, rabbis, Protestants, whatever, it's happened everywhere. And I think just one is all it takes to basically say the religion is a fraud, because it is a certainty that every one of the parents of every one of those children who go to these religious schools or these religious institutions, they all pray the same thing every night to whatever god or gods they worship: please protect my child from harm and trauma. That is the universal prayer of every parent. And nobody's answering the call. There's nobody at the other end of that prayer line answering the call. So God isn't there, or the gods aren't there. It's all a made-up business to get money into the collection plates and to get the children to line up for whatever the priests are going to do to them. It's all a big, gigantic scam and hoax. We're all coming to grips with how huge the ClimateGate scam was. Now we got to start looking at how huge the scam of organized religion. Okay? Because those parents' prayers are not being answered. They aren't. The kids are not being protected from harm and trauma by the God they worship and give money to and daven to and so forth and so on. Or the alternative theory is that God doesn't care about the parents of the prayers. He's listening to the prayers of the priest. You know, oh, Lord, give me another young one to stick it in, and goes that way, in which case he's a sick, psychotic bastard, and we shouldn't be worshiping somebody like that anyway. But the bottom line is there is no way to reconcile a belief in an all-knowing, all-powerful God with the behavior of the priests. If he can't manage his own staff, he's not capable of running the universe. I think it's time that we put away the beads and the rattles and the funny costumes and say, okay, that was a very unfortunate time in the history of humankind, but it is time to move on to a more rational state of being, a more enlightened state of being. I know I'm going to get a lot of nasty emails about this one, but tough. I'm tired of hearing about all these wounded children. I really am. Speaking of wounded children, oh, this is a good one. Okay, a TSA airport screener has been arrested on child porn charges, and he also worked at a Catholic school. And this is delicious. I mean, just proves the point. There are a bunch of sickos over there. Are you sure you want your kids going through that naked scanner at the airport now, knowing the kind of perverts they've got hired to work there? Because if this guy was there, yeah, they caught him and they arrested him. That doesn't mean that there aren't others there who aren't being a little bit more cagey and getting their jollies looking at your little kids. Now, yesterday I was talking, I had a caller who was going to Russia for educational reasons, and I expressed a certain envy, because Russia is one of the places I have not visited on planet Earth, and I'd love to. I'd love to see the Hermitage Museum, so would my wife, for that matter, would love to see the reconstructed Amber Room. And my caller was commenting about how wonderfully cultured and civilized the Russian people really are, and they are, from my own personal experience. And I got a lot of emails about that, and most of them were very supportive, saying, oh, yeah, you know, the people in Europe and Russia and everything, they're really very cultured and civilized and polite, and they're very nice people, and they really are. And I got a few emails saying, they're commies and they're Russians and they're pointing their bombs at us, and you've got to stand behind the flag, and we've got to, you know, the usual 1950s crud from the people who want to bring back the Cold War. And sadly, it looks like they're probably going to succeed on that one. But my comments about Russians were predicated on a couple of experiences. When I was just starting in school, and I think it was like third or fourth, maybe fifth grade, I don't really remember, but we had social studies. And this was the height of the Cold War. And we had a textbook called Our American Heritage. And I remember it vividly. I'm not sure why. The front cover had an illustration of a painting of a riverboat, which kind of stuck with me. And then years later, when I was working on the riverboat, I was saying, boy, I'd love to find a copy of that book. And I remember some of the cartoons they had in the book that were intended to indoctrinate us to view the Russians and the communists a certain way. And if you were to see them today, they would be almost laughable in the heavy-handed obviousness of the propaganda to make us want to hate the Russians and everything. And so I grew up with that kind of basic set of assumptions about Russians, and I finally got to meet some when I was working at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and by golly, they didn't bite my head off upon meeting. And then some years later, when I was working in Germany on behalf of an American company that I was employed with at the time, it was a film production company. I was in Munich, helping to set up a computer animation facility back in the early 80s. And I got stuck at the Frankfurt airport by weather together with an Aeroflot crew. And when we come back from the next commercial break, I will tell you that story and how it really kind of changed my view about Russians. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back. So anyway, let me finish up the story real quick. This is back in the 1980s. It was before the Berlin Wall came down, and I was at the Frankfurt Airport, and I was in the little international area for the international flights going out of the country. I was heading back down to Italy, and we were snowed in, and just dealing with that, and sitting in this little food area, just eating and drinking and staying warm, basically, and discovered that the people sitting next to me were a crew from a Soviet Aeroflot flight that was also weathered in. And I remember this one guy on the crew, he just didn't want to have anything to do with me, you know, really, oh, Americans, whatever. But everybody else on the crew, they were really cool, and they spoke great English, which was, and I know English is an aviation language and everything, but it was just, it was very charming and amazing that their English was better than most Americans I knew at the time, and I knew at that time zero Russian, but they were very friendly and they were very aware of world politics, and we had a really nice conversation. We were talking about what I was doing, and they were very interested in the movie work that I was doing at the time. And I remember the captain was very proud of his son, who wanted to be a cosmonaut. Was very much into the space program, and at that time I still had a camera bag, and my habit at the time was I had all these pins I'd collected through all my various adventures, and I had a bunch of pins left over from NASA, and so I gave them to the captain to give to his son and everything. But they were wonderful people, and basically when you actually get to meet the other side, you know, you find out they're not the horrible monsters your government tells you that they are. Reminds me also of that story about the Christmas during World War I, where the Allies and the Germans just sort of spontaneously had a Christmas gathering, and then after that, they refused to, like, fight each other anymore because they had soccer games and all the rest of that stuff. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We've got Scott in Wisconsin. Aloha, Scott. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Mike, I just fired you up for the first time in about a month. I was over in the Philippines for about 3 weeks, and you wouldn't be surprised wherever I was there. They're booming. They're actually booming. They're making products over there in their own little island. And there's a couple things I wanted to address with you. What's the latest on this unemployment deal and then on house foreclosures? I met a gentleman last Friday that came in my area, and he says he's been million-dollar houses with marble floors with a padlock on them, and he said it's just crazy. It's shocking.
Yeah, it is.
Everywhere he goes, from Missouri, well, in Wisconsin, here he says that when the padlock's on, everything, you don't get it. It stays in there. But one thing about this unemployment, they're saying today that it jumped down a little bit, but guess what? You know what? They're not talking about all the people that have exhausted their unemployment that are living without it now.
That's exactly right. That's why the number cannot be trusted. The real unemployment rate is at least 18%, could even be higher than that. The government is fibbing to us to keep us from getting angry, to keep us from basically firing them for being a lousy management structure. And you're absolutely correct. When they say we're losing more jobs and yet the unemployment rate is going down, you know something funny is going on. Whether they call it seasonal adjustment or BND analysis or whatever the rest it is, you know they're fudging the numbers downward. John Crudell wrote a very good article about this a couple of days ago where he's simply exposing they're using this birth-death model of small businesses, and it's nothing but a guess. And they tend to guess the numbers that are going to make the result look the best for the incumbent government. You know, talking about the former Soviet Union and this Russian crew that I got to hang out with, you know, the Soviet Union was notorious for this. Whatever the government needed the people to be told to keep them convinced that everything was going the best possible world, that's what Pravda and Izvestia would put out there. And, you know, a lot of people are rather amazed to find out the Western world found out about Chernobyl before the Russian people did. That's how tightly controlled their news system was back then. And we're seeing the same thing here in the United States. They're lying to us constantly about everything to get us to go along with whatever the agenda is. And some of it is laughably obvious. okay, about the propaganda. In fact, hang on here. I want to give you at least one example I was going to comment on. Okay, we're talking about the crotch bomber here. And, you know, with this fruit of the boom underwear and the whole thing. In the last couple of days, the White House has announced that this guy is cooperating and he's naming names and he's talking up a storm. And it's a press release to make it look like that they're winning the war on terror with this guy. And you know something? It's a fake. And the reason we know it's a fake is very simple. If this guy was a real terrorist and he was really cooperating, you don't admit it in the media. Because otherwise all of his associates will change their habits, they'll change their phone numbers, they'll move to new locations, they'll put on new disguises, they'll throw away their current fake IDs and move to new fake IDs. Well, they'll basically cut all connection, and the fact that they've announced this guy is cooperating proves it's just a PR election year stunt.
That's right, Michael, you couldn't say it any better. And you know why they do, another thing why they're doing this is called fear. Keep the
yes.
people under fear so that they say, oh, you little worms, you can't do anything. But I'm glad to fire you up, brother. I'm back to hear you're just on fire. Keep rolling, brother, and I'll keep you in prayer.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. Yeah, the government is just saying, you know, their credibility is blown because of Climategate and Swinegate and all the rest of that. By the way, I just saw on the news here about 30 inches of global warming is going to bury the White House tonight. So, you know, but... yeah, they've been lying to us about everything, and the lies are getting absurd. They tried another one today. They found this old wrecked piece of equipment, and they're trying to portray it all over the media as having finally found one of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. And they're waving it all over the media to say, see, see, we were right when we told you Iraq was a threat. What they have actually found appears to me to be an old ram air driven electronic countermeasures pod. It's a radar jammer. Would bolt on the end of bolt on the belly of an airplane that was leading the flight into Iran. The forward motion would spin the little ducted fan at the front to power a generator because the aircraft flight systems didn't have enough electricity for these things. And this thing would simply jam the radar from behind which they would carry out the attack. Now, somebody else has said they think it's actually an old Russian anti-ship cruise missile. I'm not sure. But the bottom line is it's not a nuclear weapon. It's not a chemical weapon. Even the news article copy below the photo said there doesn't actually seem to be any kind of a warhead on it. But they're waving it around to try and convince you that Iraq really did have nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction, and therefore everything that we're doing to those people is somehow justified. Now, Pat Buchanan came out with an article today, will Obama play the war card? Because he's looking at a loss of not only control of the American people, they're looking at losing the November elections, big time. They're going to lose Congress. They're going to lose all of that thing. And so Pat Buchanan is saying, will Obama play the war card? Well, Obama doesn't have any other cards. His credibility is shot. He's broken all the promises that he made coming into office. He's probably going to be a one-term president. And starting a war is about the only thing he's got left to do. You heard Daniel Pipes the other day saying the only way Obama can save his presidency is to attack Iran. The U.S. got out of the crash of 1904 with World War I. They got out of the crash of 1929 with World War II. Now we're in the throes of the crash of 2007, and look how hard they want a war. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're coming down to the end of our program here and heading into Super Bowl weekend. And Barack Obama, of course, is not actually attending the Super Bowl. He's hosting a bipartisan Super Bowl party at the White House. And so it's going to be kind of interesting. I'm not a big football fan. And I know everyone's going, oh, you can't be an American if you're not a big football fan. I was a photographer in high school, and I photographed all the football games. And then all of a sudden, I remember looking through the viewfinder, and there was this big number 88 that kept getting bigger and bigger. And what I didn't realize is that number 62 and number 112 were immediately behind them, and they hit me, and I got knocked out, and my camera was destroyed, and I really have not had much tolerance for football ever since then. All right, getting back to more serious matters, this story kind of came out today, and it's one of those where you scratch your head and say, what are they thinking? And apparently the thinking among the planners at the Democratic National Committee is they're thinking of dumping Biden as vice president in 2012 and replacing him with Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, first of all, changing VPs in the middle, that's a little problematic. John Kennedy was going to do that with LBJ in Kennedy's second term, except, of course, Kennedy didn't live to the second term here. If there is anybody listening to this show from the White House, and I think you're out there, I have a message from me to Barack Obama. Vincent Foster, call the FBI, get the complete file on Vincent Foster, and read it carefully. Then remember that when Reagan almost got assassinated, with George Bush Sr. sort of sitting there in that number two seat, chafing to get into the White House, and remember that the Bushes and the Hinckleys were actually friends. And on the very day that Reagan got shot, Jeb Bush was scheduled to have dinner with John Hinckley's brother. So you just think that one through very carefully and decide if you really want Hillary Clinton in that number two seat. And like I said, go to the FBI, get the full classified file on Vince Foster. I don't agree with what you're doing in office, Barack, but I wish you a long and healthy life. So there. All right, we're going to go to the phone. Solomon in Brazil. Hello, aloha, brother Solomon. What's on your mind today?
Salam, my querido hermano Ribeiro, and good evening to your distinguished audience. You know, last week it was almost impossible to get in touch with you. I think that the satellite was playing some games, or they have blocked your number or whatever. So apologies for not being present during Saturday and enjoying your voices.
Okay.
Brother Ribeiro, I was really sincerely touched by your remark that there is no freedom without the freedom to say no.
Yes.
And I would really like that people pay attention to that very fortunate way to put it, because we are saying no since long time ago, many of us, you, I, many other ones. But there are a group of individuals in uniform that are always saying yes. And they are going to follow marching orders, and they are going to push, throw your or trots the yes, mm-hmm. and we will end up involved again in another international aggression. And I make this comment because, really, we have seen it through history that, unfortunately, the military is a very well-organized political party. And they will always say yes to their masters, and they will always go forward, and they will always use the propaganda to get us involved in another aggression. So, in my opinion, if we really need to exercise the power to say no, to feel ourselves free, it would be a very good idea to start to say no to the troops right now and say, no, we are not going to support you in any kind of adventure, because you are already involved in adventures and you have never paid attention to our opinion. You are
okay,
just
okay, Solomon, I'm going to cut in here and I'm going to say I understand what you're saying, but it's not really the soldiers' problem. I think what we need to do is we need to tell the soldiers they have a right to say no. And they actually do under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Some have done it, like Lieutenant Aaron Watata. The bottom line is that everybody in the military has a right to refuse an illegal and immoral order, and the more that we support them in their right to say no, the more of them are going to do it. Now, the right to say no, when the United States was set up, the Founding Fathers very wisely had two things. The first was the Second Amendment, saying that the people could have arms equal to those of the government itself. The Second Amendment is not about sport shooting, it's not about target practice, it's not even about hunting for food. They talk about the security of a free state, the arms that are reserved to the people are clearly military arms, in order to balance a tyrannical force. The second thing the government did was they forbade the federal government to have a standing army in peacetime so that there would be no army to force us to say yes when we wanted to say no to the government. We, the American people, very foolishly and recklessly allowed the government to create for itself a standing army with which they can now threaten us. The biggest mistake we could make now is to allow the government to trick us out of our firearms. We've already lost our legal right to have military weapons equal to those of the federal government, which was the intent of the Second Amendment. And now we've got to dig in our heels because, you know, the government is getting ready to play their final card to turn this country into something that none of us want to see it become. We're being turned into the new Nazi party. Anything else, Brother Solomon?
Yeah, no one all over the world, Brother Rivero. But in my, what I really want to put it here on the table, that in short words, it will be it's time for a constitutional insubordination, and in our military, or leave it clear that the military is part of the tyranny, because you cannot play both sides at the same time.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you again, because most military people I know are strict constitutionalists. Most military I know are no more happy with what the civilian government is doing than you or I. And I think if there is a major uprising in this country, like happened in Romania, I would not be surprised to see the vast majority of the military rank and file, join the side of the people who are saying we need to restore the constitutional republic. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think this is the reason why the United States government continues to bring foreign troops into this country to train, is I think the U.S. government understands they cannot count on the continued loyalty and support of the American troops who are seeing what is happening to their families and their friends here in the United States of America. They're seeing the homelessness. They're seeing the money hemorrhage out of this country and go to Israel. They're seeing the fact that we are not the good guys in Afghanistan and Iraq and Somalia and Yemen and soon to be Iran and Pakistan and who the heck knows where else the United States wants to invade. The military who are out there, they understand. They're the bad guys. That's why we have this huge suicide and drug problem going on. Fragging is coming back into fashion, and we're seeing more and more military simply say, I don't really want to be a part of this any longer. I think when they find a common voice, I think we could see we could easily see mutinies within the military. I am still not entirely convinced that the shooting at Fort Hood didn't start as an attempted mutiny, and this whole story about this Muslim terrorist thing was dreamed up to conceal the fact that there is, in fact, dissension in the military ranks.
Brother Rivero, I'm concerned that they might be tricked to make a military coup d'etat like they have done all over the world, the military, under the pretext that we don't have a very well-organized civilian government. I'm very concerned about that. And that might
well, I am too, but, you know, on the other hand, they could hardly be any worse than the people we've got now.
Well,
I'm sorry. I don't see it. Like I said, most military I know tend to be strict constitutionalists. And, they seem to have more honor, certainly, than our civilian leadership.
I will pray to the God that doesn't exceed that really happened, Brother Rebecca.
Well, I still think, I don't think it's going to be a military coup. I think the U.S. government is simply going to collapse the way the USSR did. We need to study what happened in Russia. We need to learn from their mistakes. What did they do right? What did they do wrong? Let's kick out the oligarchs. Let us ban a private central bank from ever forming in this country. Let's have a balanced budget written right into the Constitution. Thank you very much for the call, Solomon. We're going to let you go. We'll be back with the last segment of our show right away.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Tonight. And aloha, America. Welcome back. Last segment of the show today. My goodness, it has just whizzed on by. Thanks to everybody who called, because you're making a much more fun show when you do. Interesting story here about a young man, 9-year-old, Zumante Lucero. He and his family live in Colorado, and apparently for several months last year, Zumante's mother was calling the Denver Human Services regarding prescription Medicaid coverage for medication that Zumante needed. And the Denver Human Services kept insisting that all of her children were, in fact, covered under Medicaid. And yet every time when they went to the pharmacy, pharmacist computers said, no, you have no drug coverage whatsoever. And the family could not afford to buy the medication at the full tourist rates. In July, Zumante Lucero died for lack of the medication. This 9-year-old boy has died from a bureaucratic blunder where Office A says, yes, he's covered, and whoever was putting the data into the computer said, no, he isn't. And apparently this went on for months and months where they could not find and correct and resolve the data, and as a result, the boy has died. This is government-managed health care. And the problem is, with a national system, the sheer scale of it means that errors are inevitable, and if they cannot be tracked down and fixed and dealt with in a timely manner, people are going to die. Adding data to a system, to a computer system, is linear. But the correlation among all that data is an unlimited expansion. If you have a national government-managed health care system, and it has errors in it, and remember, the U.S. government is famous for errors, and they can't find and fix the errors in a timely manner, people are going to die. This is another reason why this particular government should not be in charge of our health care. I don't have a problem with government-run health care when it's run correctly and well, as we see in places like France and Norway and Canada. So I'm not opposed to government-run health care. I'm opposed to this government running our health care. It's a perfect example of how not to do it. Now, turning back to ClimateGate, as the snow inundates the East Coast and the White House in Washington, D.C., and they're all shutting down their airports and everybody's hunkering down, state of West Virginia has already declared a statewide emergency from all the global warming that's falling all over them here. Yet another mistake has been found in the 2007 report by the IPCC. Okay, apparently, the IPCC claims that 55% of the land mass of Norway is underwater, below sea level. Holland. We know that portions of Holland are below the sea level. They've got the world famous, you know, water management, ocean management system. But it's not 55% of the country. It's about 20%. And the IPCC went and said 55% of Holland is below sea level, and they were waving it around as a warning of what will happen to the rest of the world if we don't stop human-caused global warming. And the number's completely wrong. They're off by more than 100%. And then they wonder why we don't believe anything they have to tell us anymore about human-caused global warming. Now, as you know, the Penn State formally investigated Dr. Michael Mann, the inventor of the hockey stick. And not surprisingly, given that this is an organization that was investigating itself regarding whether or not they should continue to get all of these foundation grants to study global warming, they basically whitewashed it, and they wrote him an almost clean bill of health. They basically said, there's some gray areas, but we believe him, and he's doing good work, and please send us more money. And Commonwealth Foundation, a conservative Harrisburg think tank, basically came in and said it is a whitewash because the Penn State internal review of Michael Mann completely ignored the whole issue of ClimateGate, including Michael Mann's emails, where it is obvious they're talking about concealing data from the public that didn't agree with the desired outcome. Now, I don't know why Commonwealth Foundation is surprised. We in the United States are used to organizations investigating themselves, whether it's Penn State or the U.S. Congress or the White House, and saying, see, everything is okay, go back to rowing at your oars like good little slaves. But basically, the bottom line is the global warming cult is still continuing to protect itself. It is not apologetic for what it has done. The head of the IPCC has said he will not resign. He will not apologize. They're going to bluff their way through this. And as soon as the public outcry over ClimateGate has faded, they're going to come back and they say, we have new information that says we were right all along. And you've got to pay carbon taxes. And you've got to do what we tell you to do because we know best. They're going to come back. I promise you. When this harsh winter is over and we're into next summer, they're going to be back, and they're going to say, really, seriously, this is bad. You guys got to do what we tell you to do here. Now, at the same time, we're beginning to see more and more push for Internet censorship. Time Magazine and the New York Times both came out with articles at the same time advocating licenses for website operators. And what it is that they want to do is they want to say that if you're running a website like whatreallyhappened.com, that you must get a government license, which, of course, immediately means, as has been the case with the TV networks, that you will say only what the government wants you to say. They talk about freedom of speech, but it really doesn't exist in this country. You're only allowed to put on TV what the government has cleared for you. We, back during 2003, we documented how U.S. military propaganda experts are working in the CNN newsrooms to make sure that only the correct view of the war was going to go out to the public. So now we're seeing this call for licenses for websites. And the reason is really, I think, very obvious. Copenhagen was the wake-up call. The carefully orchestrated and extremely expensive propaganda public relations campaign intended to create the illusion of a human-caused global threat requiring global carbon taxes and global government was completely undone by a network of bloggers operating on spare change we find under our seat cushions. And our only motive was getting the truth out. Contrary to the propaganda, we don't get paychecks from Exxon. Or if we do, mine's going obviously to a previous address because I've never seen one. Now, the world's leaders and the world's con artists, and here I'm repeating myself, along with all the corporate media, many of them apparently have still been in denial all these years. They are still convinced that if they spend enough money and they tell the lies long enough and often enough, that everybody will believe it. And they don't understand that the fundamental nature of the flow of information through our civilization has changed dramatically. It's no longer top down. They reveal and we hear and worship and obey. That's the last century. They're not in control of the beliefs of the human population at large. They're just now waking up to it. So just as our political and military industrial complex are trying to drag us back to the days of the Cold War in the middle of the last century with all these missiles pointed at Russia, so too the corporate media and the government would like to find some way to shut down the blogs, or at least license them so that only the blogs that support the government will have a voice on the new Internet. They want to take us back to living in the past. Well, that doesn't work. The same kind of things were tried when Gutenberg developed movable type printing and books became affordable to all. The church tried to shut it down. The various civilian governments tried to license it and control it. It didn't work, and it never will. The history of civilization is a history of despots wanting to control what the population is thinking and new technological breakthroughs that change that relationship of how information is handled in the society. We're going through it again. We are witnessing a societal change as dramatic as that of movable type printing or radio or television. And the world is never going to be the same, and it's never going to go back to being what it was. Governments are either going to evolve to deal with the new environmental reality, or they're going to go extinct. I think the U.S. government is carrying way too many lies to be able to adapt to the new reality. That's another reason I think it's going to go extinct. All right, we're going to shut down the show here today. We're going to be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. for Central Time for our end of the week look back and wrap up. So until tomorrow morning, stay safe, stay skeptical, stay angry, and aloha, America.